All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning, 9 a.m. Tuesday, November 29th. A lot of conversation around Hugh Freeze today. Tweet in at Mac and Q. Be a part of the show on the Bud Light Hotline, 800-239-9569. As we continue rolling right here on Jocks 94.5.
All the HVAC reads are just going to roll right off the tongue now that they've hired a guy with the last name Freeze. It's going to be just so easy.
Right there.
Can't wait for it. It's just going to be terrific. It's just going to, these things write themselves, you know? They really do. One thing that also writes itself is the fact that you have those GMC and Buick Dealer of the Year awards. Those things just write themselves every year to Bill Smith Buick GMC. Every single year they get them. It's unbelievable, man. You go up there off I-65, you understand why. 75% of their business repeat customers. That's because you have a better experience when you shop with Bill Smith. And in addition to that, you'll notice when you go on the lot right up there in person, if you choose to go in person, you can also shop online at BillSmithBuickGMC.com. But if you go up there on the lot, you'll realize, man, this is a ridiculous amount of inventory. Unbelievable. And that's why they can provide you with better discounts than anybody. Like right now, you go get yourself a brand new 2022 GMC 1500 Sierra Denali, $76,730. That's the list price. Well, sale price under $70,000. It's nearly 10% off a Denali. Absolutely ridiculous deal. Go see Andy Cole. Go see Jonathan Yeager. Tell them we sent you. And tell them also that you're going to really, really want the best deal available. They'll make sure they get it for you. That's what they do at Bill Smith. It's unbelievable the deals that you'll find. You can also go check out their used car superstore. Shop online, BillSmithBuickGMC.com, or you can go right up there in person, right up I-65 off Highway 31, Bill Smith Buick GMC.
All right, so transfer portal is a place that Hugh Freeze most likely going to have to try and do some damage if he's going to be successful, especially year one as the head coach at Auburn. I saw Tom Dinehart, who covers Purdue, formerly of the Big Ten Network. He tweeted out an hour ago, by my count, 80 players entered the NCAA transfer portal on November 28th, saying it's really heating up, open for business December 5th, obviously, through January 18th.
80, you said?
80.
It's not that many. Think about how many guys are playing college football.
80 in a day, though?
I mean, but that's not as many as you would think. I mean, really, the first day that they can kind of...
There are some names, though, that you will recognize. Missouri wide receiver Dominic Lovett.
Yes.
Georgia Tech quarterback Jeff Sims.
Jeff Grimes.
Jeff Grimes not in the transfer portal. Apparently, his name was taken out of that.
He needs to be hired by somebody, though. Like, I mean, if you're looking for a new OC, Jeff Grimes needs to be on the list.
Like what you did there.
Okay. Texas A&M defensive end Elijah Judy. Not a name that folks are very familiar with, but he was a four-star in the 2021 class. Just like running back L.J. Johnson, who was in the 2021 class and was the number 46 player overall. Why is that important? That's apparently the greatest recruiting class in the history of football that now at least two have announced they're out, or at least in the portal.
Not necessarily out, about to say.
Right, just in the portal.
They're holding out.
Leverage is a real thing. Arkansas running back James Joyner, a freshman running back. Ole Miss quarterback Luke Altmyer.
Something in your throat?
No, we'll pass. Oh. Ole Miss defensive end Demon Clowney.
I think he went in the portal like 7-8 weeks ago.
Yeah, it was probably about week 3-4.
If you count portal as not wanting to go in the game, yes.
Oh.
Michigan quarterback Cade McNamara is in the portal. Tulsa quarterback Davis Brin, who has been really productive at Tulsa. USF linebacker Antonio Greer. He was a freshman all-conference performer last year. And then Alabama running back Trey Sanders, cornerback Kyrie Jackson, who has been suspended the last two games, and offensive lineman Damian George from Alabama, all in the NCAA transfer portal, as well as Arizona State quarterback Paul Tyson in the NCAA transfer portal. So it was a busy, busy day yesterday in the portal. And it just continues to go. That's just, those are names that we, schools we know, names we know from different places. It was loaded with other guys. But like you said, Greg, there are some of these players that know they can leverage certain things and they're just looking to do that. Other guys know they're going to be out. Like there was certain player, Arkansas defensive back Miles Slusher. He actually quit the team before the Missouri game. Just said, out.
That's why I'd do it. He was also suspended.
Well,
I mean, kind of, you know, getting arrested like the week before and
details,
you know, being told you have to miss the rest of the season I guess you kind of quit.
Kind of. Yeah. Okay. All right. A little bit of other coaching news for you quickly before we move on. Idaho State head coach Charlie Royal is going to join the Arizona State staff as a special teams and tight ends coach. UNLV fires Marcus Arroyo. He's 5-7 this year.
Yeah.
They hadn't won five games since 2013. And I know the overall record's not good. Came in COVID year. UNLV, it feels like an impossible place to have success. And they're going to move on from Marcus Arroyo. Okay. Nebraska closing in on South Carolina offensive coordinator Marcus Satterfield. He looks like he is going to join that staff, as well as Evan Cooper is going to coach DBs. He has been previously with the head coach there. Luke Fickell's deal, 7 years, 7.9 per. Matt Rhule's deal, 5.5 years or $12.5 million total for 5.5 years. It looks like he'll get 90% guaranteed of $74 million for Matt Rhule. Darryl Dickey's out as the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M, and Dale Jones out as the defense coordinator at Appalachian State. So those are your coaching moves, maneuvers, transfer portal news and updates, as a lot seems to be happening in college football. It's been busy.
Busy.
B.
Oh, yeah. I thought, I couldn't tell. That's sure question mark.
Where you want to go with that?
I mean, honestly, like, it's just been busy. I don't know what you want me to add. Like, I actually think that more are coming. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, you got guys that are playing this week. There's going to be a whole slew of new players next week. Like, and when 38% placement, at some point, these kids are going to realize they're not as good as they think they are. And they're a dime a dozen. And it's going to be an unfortunate reality for a lot of guys. I mean, everyone thinks they go in the portal to find the greener grass on the other side of the street. Well, guess what? Grass ain't always greener over there. So I've stopped caring about them. I used to care and be like, man, I feel so bad for these kids. They're getting bad information. They're getting this, they're getting that. I used to feel bad for them. I really did. And I used to want what was best for them, but now I've gotten to the point, man, you dig your own grave. Like, if that's where you're at and you think you're such a great player and you want to leave and go check it out, go for it, man. I see a lot of guys that I follow the portal on the Twitter map or whatever, the guy Feral Portal or whatever. I follow that guy and I see all these guys.
Okay. Yeah. There we go.
Whoever the hell it is. I don't know who he is. Anyways, I see that whole thing and I see guys going in. Oh, here's a guy. Here's a transfer from Georgia Tech. He's in the portal. He just picked up an offer from Missouri State. Oh, great. Good for you. So you just went down, right? And there's nothing wrong with going down. It's fine. But if you think you're at Georgia Tech and all of a sudden you're going to be like Jahmyr Gibbs, the second coming, and just end up at Bama, go for it. But it just doesn't like work like that for many people.
Not exactly how it goes.
You'd be amazed at how many guys transfer to big schools. Those that actually do get big offers and they'll transfer only to do nothing at the school and just be a guy or be some depth or get beat out or whatever it may be. And guess what? You're back in the portal. How'd it work out for Calzada this year? Did he have a good year?
He didn't play a ton of football, but he was injured, Greg.
I did see him throw in flip-flops before a game.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good look.
That did happen.
Is he back in the portal, by the way?
I have not seen the tape on that.
Hadn't seen the tape.
All right, I want to get to a couple of games we did mention from yesterday. We'll wrap up the SEC quickly. South Carolina Clemson, we didn't spend a ton of time on that game yesterday. Juice Wells, massive game for the Gamecocks. Another big game for Spencer Rattler, 360 yards, two touchdowns, and just a huge win for Shane Beamer. 31-30, they knock off Clemson, down big early, 14-0 at the end of the first quarter. And I like the way that South Carolina is maneuvering the offense. Jaheim Bell lined up in different places. Marshawn Lloyd didn't do a ton, but I do think having him back was big. I just think from a confidence perspective, from a respect perspective. And I thought the best part about Rattler in this game, Greg, he overcame two of the worst picks I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Pick six early and the interception in the end zone. That was as much of, I am going to throw the ball here pre-snap as you will ever see. That was a decision that was made before anything. No, it didn't matter what the defense was. Didn't matter what the look was. Like, I'm throwing to that guy because there was actually a Clemson defender that intercepted it from a Clemson defender who was in front of Juice Wells. And that just wasn't going to get there. Shipley had a nice day. DJ, I know Dabo came out yesterday and said he's still their guy. Greg, he was 8 of 29.
Terrible.
I mean, but just nothing looks comfortable. Nothing looks confident. It is remarkable to see how that has gone backwards. And I'm not just trying to be hard on the kid, but I mean, you've pointed it out before. We saw him be amazing at times, and it is so far from that that it's just remarkable to see.
And the other thing, too, like everyone's saying, oh, well, Klubnik, put Klubnik in. Dude, we don't know if Klubnik's good. Have you seen anything?
I've seen a little bit of him, and it wasn't great.
No, it wasn't great. Guess what? The Syracuse game, if that's what you're referring to, when, oh, he came in and saved the day. Oh, gotcha. Okay, it wasn't the defense. Certainly wasn't the run game. It was Klubnik. It wasn't the two egregious penalties, one that was called and one that wasn't, that went against Syracuse in the game.
What about the refusal of Syracuse to run their quarterback, which was 90% of their offense early and just didn't do it late?
Well, all those things considered. Either way, what I'm getting at is, in order to make a quarterback change, you have to know that the guy that you're putting in is better than the actual guy that's in there. And I don't know that. And Dabo knows more about what goes on at practice. I see so many people killing Dabo about this. Like, dude, we don't know if Klubnik might throw a pick to scout team 2-3 times a day for all we know. We don't know. So I think that anybody that's clamoring, saying they got to make a quarterback change, I don't disagree. I think DJ's been terrible. But, I mean, I can't sit here and tell you that Klubnik's a whole lot better as a true freshman. Maybe he's just as bad. Maybe this decision-making is just as questionable.
I think people just get so far off and don't have an understanding of you have to be able to handle it and manage it first. Before your arm ability, before, you know, your escapability, your how fast you are, how hard you can throw it, how far you can throw it. Like, you've got to be able to get guys lined up. You've got, like what you talked about with Jimbo yesterday, that, you know, Jimbo said, listen, there's a reason we haven't been shifting formations on every down. There's a reason that we don't have two motions on every play. Like, we have, our guys are young to the extent that they can't handle all of that.
Yes.
And a lot of times younger quarterbacks can't go in and get guys lined up and check a protection or even know which way to check a run, which is not very advanced, but there are guys that they're not ready for that. And you have to be at least capable of that before you get to the ability and what could potentially happen there. It's a bad loss for Clemson. That ends their 40-game home winning streak. There were 7 straight that they had knocked off South Carolina. Both those streaks now gone. And Beamer gets to 8 wins. Just a remarkable season. We said on this show we thought he would exceed expectations. I don't think we thought we'd get to 8. I think we thought 7 was the max. He gets to 8, and it's just a pretty impressive year. Kentucky knocks off Louisville 26-13. Kind of a workmanlike performance. Nothing real special. Chris Rodriguez was solid in this game.
That was a ranked win. What do you mean?
I mean how they did it. But like, it wasn't Will Levis didn't go for 400 or Rodriguez didn't go for 250. They just kind of handled their business. Rodriguez was solid. Great use of the tight ends, I thought, by Will Levis. He was efficient. Didn't try to do too much, which is what's, I feel like, kind of gotten him in trouble at times. And, you know, I don't know where Louisville is right now, to be honest with you, because it's, you kind of thought with a decent amount coming back and Malik Cunningham returning, that this would be a little bit of a turnaround year. They end up 7-5, same place that Kentucky ends up, but a nice win for Stoops, at least to close out with a victory. They have lost a couple straight, so they needed that one. And they get a rivalry win, which is still big.
I think it's a great win. And honestly, that's kind of what Kentucky is. Not a ton of flash. This year especially, just kind of grinded out. Good workmanlike win like you described. That's how they win, right? So no frills. Just get the job done. It's exactly what they did. I thought it was solid. Nothing to complain about, nothing to be disappointed about, nothing to really expound upon, but another solid year from Kentucky. But had they been a little better up front offensively, mm-hmm. It would have been nice to have seen this offense at full go. If they had last year's offensive line with this year's team, I think it would have been really interesting. It just wasn't to be.
I agree. All right, I want to get to a couple of national games before we welcome in Tom Hart here in about 5 minutes. Michigan, Ohio State. Man, this was something. Lived up to the hype. at least for the first half, and then Michigan kind of walked away late. But J.J. McCarthy was exceptional, and you talk about the ability to just say, okay, if you are going to defend us this way, we are going to take that from you. It's exactly what Michigan did. It was an excellent job by him. You get Blake Corum early, and then he exits the game, and you kind of think, oh, no, this is going to be the end for Michigan. And then Donovan Edwards just goes nuts. 22 carries for 216 yards, two rushing touchdowns for the Michigan Wolverines, and they pound Ohio State 45-23. C.J. Stroud did some good things, but he turned it over, and the run game wasn't consistent for Ohio State. Marvin Harrison Jr. solid again. But this is now 2 years in a row, Greg, that Ohio State has had their will imposed upon them by the Michigan Wolverines. And this time it was at home. This one just even felt more different than last year. Last year felt like a little bit of weather, obviously some elite pass rushers. That was one aspect that you could take advantage of. This felt like exactly what we described it as. The better team in almost every area went out and played better football, and that's why Michigan won this game.
Yes, they were the more complete team, the more balanced team, and they had a great plan. I mean, if you look at what they did to try to create some favorable matchups, if you look at, for instance, the long touchdown, the second one, long touchdown all created by motion cross ball, they had to build a stack. And then they know that if they motion that stack across, they put the defender, they're going to be able to widen the defender and get one-on-one with the safety if the motion guy goes wide to the field. All right, no problem. The one-on-one held up in protection, threw a bomb touchdown. They also beat the blitz on the first touchdown of the game.
Yep.
Beat the blitz, quick out of his hands, turn and run. Guy misses a tackle. Can't guarantee that, but guy misses a tackle. And next thing you know, Johnson's out the gate. I thought it was just a very solid plan all the way around. And look, Michigan's the kryptonite to Ohio State's Superman. Ohio State is a front-running team. When things are good, they're great. When they're hot, they're tough to beat. You won't beat them. On a difficult day, you won't beat them. Or on a day when they're clicking on all cylinders, you won't beat them. Doesn't matter who you are. But if you can turn them into their, you know, C game, you can smoke them. You really can. You can really smoke them. And that's exactly what Michigan did. And then in the fourth quarter, the way they just stayed with it, and ran the football, got a little bit of misdirection there in the fourth quarter, off tackle to the right, touchdown out the gate. Like they did or inside zone to the right, really. They did a great job, I thought, all things considered for where they're at. Really, really good job.
Thought J.J. McCarthy played great. You mentioned some of the pressure. He saw it coming. It was there. And you can say, well, Jim Knowles, maybe he was a little bit too aggressive. But in order to attempt to slow down that rushing attack, you almost had to be. You had to try to create. Michigan goes 35 carries for 252 on the ground. They average over 7 yards a carry against this Ohio State defense. So you add that to the explosives that you got. And you got an 85-yard touchdown run, a 75-yard touchdown reception. When you can grind it out on the ground and create explosives, there's not a lot you can do defensively.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden, you are at a point in which there are not many answers to the problems that you're suffering.
That's the thing, is like that style of football, even though it's, you know, everyone says, you know, it's ground, you got to air it out. If you are totally dependent on throwing the football, you're not going to be great all the time. You're just not. You're too dependent on your quarterback. You're just too, if he has the tiniest bit of an off day, if protection's just a little off, like all those things, man, like you're going to have some issues. I think if you are a team that really emphasizes the run game, the vertical run game, if you're a team that really emphasizes trying to create balance, like that is still the best pathway to victory to me. Like that's the offenses that I grew up in. Balance is paramount.
Yep.
And I think if you're one-dimensional, you're so much easier to defend. Ohio State has stunk all year long running the football, especially earning tough yardage against quality front sevens defensively. Well, look, in a game in which it comes down to the line of scrimmage, who hangs on? The team that's better along the line of scrimmage.
Well, even teams like a Tennessee, you go back and look, I think Josh Heupel has run for over 200 yards in 15 of his 25 or 26 games, or 16 to 25 games, something like that. I mean, when it's right, they're running the ball, and yes, that's what they want to do first. Now, it looks different. It doesn't look overly traditional like an Oregon State would or a Michigan does, but that balance that you talked about can be big. I mean, it's obviously massive. Obviously a big portion of why Michigan was successful.
I think, I'm telling you, I think if I were trying to put an offense together, balance is number one. And honestly, I still like the traditional. If I can play 12 personnel all the time, that's what I'd live in. And granted, you got to have two tight ends.
And if you have two tight ends that can move and line up different places, now you're really cooking. Because people don't even know how to line up against you.
If I were an offensive play caller, that's where I'm living. Call me all day long. Say I'm archaic. Say I'm old school. Fine. I don't care.
And then
the
part of that Michigan team that we've probably been sleeping on all year was a receiver group. It was
much better than people realize.
A lot of guys coming back. Ronnie Bell was coming back. Cornelius Johnson, big game against Ohio State. But that is a better group than a lot of people realize. And I think that group could be the difference in the postseason this go around, as opposed to last year. And quarterback. I think quarterback's a little bit more capable than Cade McNamara.
Just a little higher ceiling. I mean, he's just more difficult to defend. I mean, he extended a couple plays even early, and there were a couple extended plays rolling to his left, hitting a couple third down conversions on scramble drill that I just don't know if Cade McNamara is going to make on a regular basis. Doesn't mean Cade McNamara is chopped liver. I think Cade's a really good player, and he would definitely be an attractive option in the portal. Like, if I'm Auburn, I am very interested in Cade McNamara. That dude's a grinder.
We will get to a break. When we come back, we'll ask Tom Hart about Tennessee just on that call. College football playoff rankings tonight and the Hugh Freeze hire at Auburn. Next, right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing to say.
Congratulations.
Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
me. Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. 9:27 a.m. Tuesday, November 29th, as we continue moving right here on Jocks 94.5.
Crocker Moving Services is the local company owned by an Iraq War veteran, Eric Crocker. Crocker believes in hiring movers you can trust, complete full background checks and drug tests on every single employee. These are good guys. You can trust them in your home. You need your whole home packed up and moved. Your company headquarters moved across country, or you just want them to come rearrange your living room. These guys got you covered. They also do deliveries for furniture that you purchase need to get to your house. Call or visit them online today for a free quote. The website is CrockerMovingServices.com. That's CrockerMovingServices.com. Support your veterans by choosing Crocker Moving Services for your next move.
All right. We bring them in each and every Tuesday. Thanks to our friends at Craneworks. It's Tom Hart of ESPN, the SEC Network.
Lift it, load it, grade it, grind it, move it, haul it, rig it, dig it, Craneworks, Rentworks, yeah, the big dog's got it.
Tom Hart on McElroy and Kubelik in the morning is brought to you by Craneworks. Lift it, buy it, rent it, the big dog's got it. Now, Tom Hart.
Tom, always great to have you. Your initial reaction to Auburn hiring Hugh Freeze as their next head football coach.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning,
everybody. You know, I found the whole process very interesting. I think it always is with these hires. I think the bottom line is when you're spending this much money and you're making such a big investment, at some point it becomes risk avoidance. And they looked at a guy, and this is just me from afar, they looked at a guy who had success in SEC games, even though his record doesn't reflect it now because of the NCAA issues, and had success against Nick Saban. And they are betting on that part of the risk being minimized and less concerned with the off-the-field issues, which won't ever go away. no matter how much he wins, it will be quieted or minimized. But that part of his history can never be swept under the rug. So that's going to take a delicate balancing act. They decided, the folks who made this hire at Auburn decided that winning was the most important thing. And that's evident by the hire. My biggest question, guys, from a football standpoint is, what made Hugh Freeze a winning coach in the SEC? Was it because of the talent that he had there? And I know that it all goes under the same umbrella. Or was it because of his coaching? And how he acquired the talent, which may be legal in some ways now, was against the rules, and he procured some sort of advantage at the time. So that all on the football side of things will be fascinating to watch how that develops now in his new job.
What do you think the reaction will be across the SEC footprint? I know Auburn has had a bit of a mixed reaction, understandably so. But what do you think the rest of the SEC is saying as far as what Hugh might bring to Auburn?
Oh, I think it will be a very harsh reaction throughout the league and throughout all of college football. And if we haven't seen them yet, the strong editorials on the media side will come out in earnest now and then be repeated in the spring and then rehashed in July at media days. And he'll have to answer some very tough questions about decisions he's made and actions he's had in the past. So that doesn't move at all until football starts, you know, until you have games to talk about. So it will be very harsh until September, and that will always continue. And I think it's fair. I think we look at coaches now in a different light. They're still on a pedestal. Maybe, and you can make an argument that more so than they should be, but they're still on a pedestal, and they get paid handsomely to do so. But more and more people are comfortable standing up and saying what you did away from the field as a leader of men is not ideal, and you should have to answer for that. And I think, you know, generations ago, that was just, you know, scuttlebutt at the tavern or wherever we get the barbershop, and was kind of swept under the rug as long as you won games. And I don't think we're in that era anymore.
Tom Hart of ESPN, the SEC Network, joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. So everything included just is what it is. How would you grade the hire for Auburn?
I can't give it a grade yet. I mean, I don't know if he would have played by the rules at Ole Miss if he would have been as successful on the field. And I don't know if he would be able to play by the new rules in his new job. I think you have to take with a grain of salt the success that he had in the league when he was in Oxford because of how he obtained that success. If that was just a blip on the screen and he would have been successful regardless, and we'll know soon enough and we'll know during recruiting what that's going to look like. But I think it's incomplete until we get game results.
I mean, don't be soft. What's the freaking grade, Tom?
Well, let me ask you this, because I had a hard
time. Yeah, I'd like to wait 8 years before I gave a grade to Gus Malzahn's tenure, but unfortunately, we don't live in that world. Why don't you tell us what the grade is relative to what you think of Hugh as a candidate and the marriage that will now be made with Auburn?
Let me get your feedback real quickly. What would you give his grade at Ole Miss from just a straight coaching standpoint?
I would think at the time when he took over in 12 and they went 2-10, and then it was culminated a couple years later with a Sugar Bowl victory and a Peach Bowl berth, I would say it was about as close to an A as you could get. Ole Miss felt like...
But if you're grading his entire tenure, you have to take the beginning, the middle, and the end. So I don't think it can just be an A. Yeah, it would probably have to be...
I wanted Greg's feedback just on when the coaching was at its best, on field stuff. I don't disagree with that. I think today it's a C hire. There's certainly potential for it to be better. And I think he's going to I think he's going to wow during the press conference and tell the right things. He's a highly intelligent person and extremely motivated. But no, I think it's a C. We go. You got it out of me.
Yes. Okay. Well done.
By the way, you can hear that press conference in about 30 minutes right here on Jocks 94.5. 3-Man Front will carry that live for you. You had Tennessee over the weekend. I'm just interested because it was an impressive win. What was the most impressive part of that win for Tennessee this past weekend?
You know, I think big picture, when you think about what Josh Heupel has built, and we use the word culture a lot, and that's such a nebulous term. Like, what does that really mean? To me, it was illustrated by the fact that they lost. They built up to this dream season, and all of those dreams were lost. And they had, I don't want to say nothing to play for, but relative to what they had been playing for just a week before, Heisman Trophy, a chance in playoff, a national championship opportunity, all of that was gone and out the window. And in an era of players saying, what's best for me and what's in it for me, they came out and they took care of business and they dominated and they looked like an elite team doing it. So I just think big picture, the way they executed and put the throttle down on Vanderbilt proved that they're an elite team, an elite team that caught some bad breaks and that had really porous defense and what turned out to be their most important. As big as the Alabama game was, the most important game of the year for them was at South Carolina, and they let Spencer Rattler torch them for 63 points. They bounced back from that, and that was really impressive.
Yeah, I thought the mentality was most impressive, the motivation, because I really questioned where that was going to be going into that game. What's your next biggest surprise from rivalry weekend?
South Carolina doing it again, and the evolution of Spencer Rattler as a guy who in that pro-style offense was completely lost and didn't know where his receivers were supposed to line up. To handle the complications of that offense, to learn it, the job that Marcus Satterfield did with him to get to a point late in the year where he could lead them to back-to-back top 10 wins was incredibly impressive. Threw for 360 against Clemson, and once again, you know, I don't know that South Carolina is the most talented team, but what Shane Beamer has turned them into is going to pay dividends when it comes to recruiting, and they're going to have to be reckoned with. I mean, that's a program with a ton of momentum right now.
Absolutely. Tom, we always appreciate the time. We know each and every week you're brought to us by Craneworks.
Yeah, Craneworks is the most trusted name for crane and equipment rental in the Southeast for over 30 years. They have a fleet of cranes ranging from 2.5 tons to 500 tons, and they also offer trained and certified operators to make sure the job is done right. You can visit craneworks.com for more information.
Would you like to be a part of our bad basketball box score of the day? I'm just throwing that out there. This is a segment that we do each and every day. Would you like to be a part of that real quick?
May I?
Oh, okay, good. Damian, if you'll bring it in, please. As you can tell, we spared no expense on the production value of this segment because it is it's a very important part of what we do each and every day, and we want the people to know just how important it is. Okay, last night, you're familiar with Bryant, right? Tournament team last year, 6-1 on the season.
Yeah.
I bet you're not familiar with Framingham State. The Rams.
The Fram Rams.
They knocked off Framingham State. Bryant did 98-44 last night. You tell me if these are good numbers for you. The Frams shot 25% from the floor, Tom. 16 of 64.
Ah, cold.
Ouch.
2 of 16 from behind the three-point line. Now, they did hit 10 of 16 from the free throw line.
Okay.
Now, 15 offensive rebounds, better than what we normally get
in
some of these instances. But still.
Not terrible.
16.
Well, there's a lot of offensive rebounds available.
There were.
Right.
There
correct. Were. So it wasn't effort. It wasn't effort this time.
They turned it over 19 times. And here's maybe the most impressive part about this. I have not gone to check the tape on who the Framingham State Rams coach is. They played 23 players in this game. 23 players had minutes in this game for the Rams.
Deep roster.
So I don't know if that means like the managers got in, the film guys got in, but everyone who was in a uniform, I believe, got in for Framingham State. So that is
what
do scholarships consist of at Framingham? Like we get room and board, and then some people only get books, and then the 23rd guy is getting what, a pair of socks?
Oh yeah,
yep, probably.
I don't know, but Framingham State, the head coach, Coach Donald Morris Jr. He's a Somerville native. And has had successful coaching stints at Mass Bay Community, Newberry College.
Is that near Adventure Bay?
Emerson, Daniel Webster College, Suffolk University, and Leslie University.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had less points last night.
This guy.
Yeah.
And he also had a this is interesting. His coaching resume, not as interesting as his playing resume, as he was invited to try out for the Cape Cod Frenzy, the Newark Express, and the Charlotte Blue Waves.
Oh.
I think he must have played against Jackie Moon in the ABL.
Oh, boy.
Do you know the league that any of those teams are in, Tom, that Greg just named? What was it, the Charlotte Wave?
The Charlotte Blue Waves, not just any wave.
No, Blue Wave. The Newark Frenzy?
That's a little political for me to talk about the Blue Wave, you know what I mean?
Careful.
No, but my bet is that Eric Musselman coached in one of those leagues at one point.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Wow. Oh, well, okay.
56 was your largest lead last night for Bryant over the Framingham State Rams.
The real FSU.
Yes. It does say it. FSU on their website.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
Well, they're the same team that lost to Eastern Nazarene week two. So if you're going to you're gonna drop one to Nazarene, like it's going to be a long season.
Yes.
That is a good point.
Can only imagine if Tom Hart would have been on the call for Bryant in Fram State, what that thing would have sounded like late with a 56-point lead. But nonetheless, thank you for being a part of that today, Tom. We enjoyed it.
No, it's my pleasure.
All right, talk to you soon. Tom Hart, ESPN, the SEC Network, joining us there on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there. There were a couple of runners-up in our bad basketball box score of the day last night. Texas A&M Commerce, they knocked off Arlington Baptist 101-46.
A little bit closer.
Sacred Heart knocked off Western New England 100-59.
Okay.
Now, this could be a double bad box. Marist knocked off Columbia 52-39. Maybe that was just a lot of good defense happening in that game. I don't know.
Come on now.
If that's exactly how it went. And finally, Southern knocked off Champion Christian College 112.
CCC?
The Champion Christian College Tigers 112-52. 112-52. Champion Christian shot 18 of 58 from the floor and got 9 offensive rebounds. They missed 40 shots and only gathered up 9 of them.
Don't have a problem with that. Want to know why? Trying to get back on defense.
They gave up 112. There's your problem. All right, when we come back, put a lid on Hugh Freeze as the Auburn head football coach. Get back to some of your reaction at Mac and Cube via Twitter, 800-239-9569 if you want to get in next on McElroy and Kublik in the morning.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kublik in the morning. 9:48 a.m. Tuesday, November 29th, right here on Jocks 94.5.
The holidays are upon us. It means you need to head down to the basement. I actually did this yesterday. Went down and got my Christmas tree out, put it up last night. And here's the problem. There wasn't any water in my basement. Why? Because I've already trusted Be Dry to take care of my stuff. If I had something, they'd come out. That's because you have a life of the structure warranty. They're going to take unbelievable care of you. So if you're down there, check everything out. Make sure your crawl space, your basement, there is no mildew, there is no moisture. Check it out. You're going to be glad that you did. Because if something's down there, you want to get it done, taken care of right now. For 60 years, they've been Central Alabama's go-to when it comes to waterproofing and foundation repair. They're the largest waterproofing company in the country, and right now they're offering 12 months interest-free and no payments. That's right, no payments for 12 months. Get the job finished before the first of the year and have plenty of cash on hand for holiday fun. Call Beach right now to get the job done right with the strongest warranty at the best price. Call them at 942-1976 or visit BeachDryAlabama.com.
All right, Mark in Atlanta wants to talk to you. Freeze. You're on the Bud Light Hotline. Mark, welcome in.
Hey, Greg and Cole. Appreciate you taking my call. Hey, I think the missing point here that a lot of people are missing is that who handled this search for Auburn. If you look at who handled it, John Cohen was primarily responsible. And what I know about John is that he was the athletic director at Mississippi State about the time Hugh Freeze was at Ole Miss. So he has an intimate knowledge of Hugh Freeze. The second gentleman that was involved,
I believe he was the baseball coach. When did he exactly move up from AD to baseball?
He was the AD during part of Hugh's tenure.
He was the associate AD in 2016. So 2016. So they overlapped. He was the AD in like 2016, but he's a baseball coach for most of Hugh's tenure.
Yeah, and I think the point is that John Cohen has a very strong knowledge of who Hugh Freeze is as a person. That's one. Two, Rich McGlynn at Auburn. And for the benefit of your audience, if you don't know that name, he works behind the scenes at Auburn's, and I promise you, he was involved in the vetting of Hugh Freeze. He worked for the NCAA Infractions Committee and was hired by Auburn to oversee the Cam Newton pay-for-play issue, which he handled marvelously, and he now has worked at Auburn a long time. So he knows a lot about what happened with the NCAA and Hugh Freeze, so if you're a really good reporter, you sort of look beyond this and you look at these two gentlemen. And listen, when Alabama got into trouble with, you know, the Mike Shula and all the coaches they had, of course I made fun of it as a fan. But if you really dig deep on this, you realize Auburn vetted this very, very well.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. And we mentioned it earlier in the show that it just how that happened, Mark. And just kind of talked about some of the things that were done and how those things were done. I haven't doubted the vetting process. I don't think that it was taken lightly.
But I think you'll hear a lot of Tom Hartz and Barrett Salees pontificating and throwing out. There'll be jokes made. There already has been. And that's going to happen for a long time. But if you really critically look at this as a reporter, Auburn has crossed a lot of T's and dotted a lot of I's on this thing.
See, but I think it's going to be low-hanging fruit for some folks, but, you know, I believe in redemption personally. Like, I think that people can make mistakes and still, you know, be good people at their core. Like, I really believe that. This is not me virtue signaling. That's honestly what I believe. Like, I know plenty of people that have been reformed, right? So, I'm not going to sit here and...
I want to say one additional thing. I don't have to say this, but I followed SEC football, and I've been in Jordan-Hare Stadium for 37 years. I've been in that stadium multiple games every year, and my kids are devout Auburn fans. And I have to say, I've seen a lot of announcers come through, and Cole and Greg, I do think you guys are really, really good. So I just want to say that.
Well, appreciate that very much. But back to what we were discussing quickly about Hugh. Like, if we're looking at the football field, You can look at his past, and everyone can have their own assessment of the past. But ultimately, Cole and mine's job, we are not here to be the, you know, I am not going to be the judge, jury, and executioner on what a person's been or what a person's done. I will evaluate him on the football field because ultimately that's Cole and mine's job. Like, I'm not,
sure,
you know, I'm not going to sit here and try to act holier than thou and say how dare Auburn or, you know, act like I'm the moral authority on what a coach should or shouldn't be. I think Hugh's a good football coach. I mean, if I'm evaluating just the football by itself, the XO, I think he's a good football coach. Now, there are additional personality traits that need to go along with being a good football coach in order to be successful. Like, I don't think you can be thin-skinned. I think Hugh's a little thin-skinned. I think that's going to be something he's going to have to work through. I think you're going to have to be able to shut off the media. The media, after a bad performance, is going to be critical, and he has a tendency to react strongly in those scenarios. So, like, I think there are additional things that I have question marks about, but I think to focus exclusively on certain aspects of his personal life, to me, is not the correct way to kind of – that's not the way I'm going to go about it, Cole, and I think we've kind of been on the same page with that as well.
No, Mark, and we talked about just the background checks that were done. You know, Kerry Cecil was brought in, a crisis management firm that did some extra vetting, and, you know, she's the bulldog. She'll go get it, and she'll figure out exactly what needs to be done, how it's going to happen, and I wouldn't question her toughness as she's married to Chuck Cecil, who is one of the toughest players in the history of the NFL. So Auburn did their due diligence and looked into what the potential problems could be, might be, would be, and whether or not it could be done. And they came to the conclusion that it could. And so they moved forward with it. None of us have doubted that.
When
so.
You read the message board, when you read the message boards, 99% of it is people thinking that we have no knowledge of how to handle. And if you dig just a little bit, had this amount of due diligence and did do what they needed to do. Greg, I take away the football thing. I actually think you look at his records, I think it speaks for itself. I think you and Tom Hart's sort of firmed that up with your grade of him, and I agree with the grade. I think he's a very good football coach.
So. All right. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate you listening over in Atlanta on the app. You can get that in your app store, iPhone, Android. Download it for free. Listen online, jocksfm.com. The podcasts are always available. Find those at jocksfm.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get yours. Please like, rate, review, subscribe to those. Before we let you run, Senegal up on Ecuador, Netherlands up on Qatar. World Cup action.
There you Nervous go. About U.S. today?
No. Feeling pretty good about the
Are Iran. You going to lose sleep if we tie?
No. I think USA is going to be just fine. Three-man front next. They will have the Hugh Freeze press conference live.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.